Havertown to Greenville, Jersey Shore to Katanning, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, excessive state regulations are costing Pennsylvania businesses billions of dollars each year. Elizabeth Still from the Commonwealth Foundation is here to talk about their new report on cutting red tape in Pennsylvania. Higher taxes for public education, property reassessments, even the office vacancy rates in our cities could result in higher taxes in 2024. Frank Gamrat and Eric Montardi have an Allegheny Institute report. And President Joe Biden visited Allentown to tout Bidenomics, but are voters buying the spin? Emily Green from Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania weighs in with this week's Lincoln Radio Journal commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to Elizabeth Still of the Commonwealth Foundation in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. The state's education establishment is pushing for a dramatic increase in funding for K-12 education in the wake of a Commonwealth court ruling that found Pennsylvania's current distribution of state dollars to be unconstitutional. While the ruling didn't mandate more spending, it has been seized upon by big government advocates as a reason to add to the already skyrocketing cost of funding schools. Meanwhile, student enrollment in many districts is declining. A quarter of schools in the City of Philadelphia School District have seen more than a 20% decline in enrollment over the past few years, creating a situation where the debate centers on spending more money to educate fewer students. It's that time of year when you may find a candidate or a party activist knocking on your door, asking you to sign what is known as a nomination petition. Candidates are required to gather a certain minimum number of signatures on nomination petitions in order for their name to be placed on the primary election ballot. Every candidate for offices from president to state representative must do this, and they have 3 weeks within which to gather the required number of signatures. That petition period is early this year, as the Pennsylvania presidential primary will be held in mid-April, when in non-presidential years, the primary is held in May. It is the first step in a year-long process, which will culminate in the general election this November. Professional athletes competing in the city of Pittsburgh will walk away with more money in their wallets, as the Commonwealth Court has ruled a tax on income of athletes using publicly funded stadiums and arenas, which is to say all of them, is unconstitutional. Players for the National Hockey League and Major League Baseball, along with player unions, had challenged the validity of the tax, and the court agreed 6-1 that it is, in fact, unconstitutional. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. The cost of complying with a complex web of state regulations adds greatly to the cost of doing business in Pennsylvania, and it frustrates many small business owners. The Commonwealth Foundation recently released a report entitled Cutting Red Tape in Pennsylvania. It was authored by Elizabeth Still, who is Director of Policy Analysis at the Commonwealth Foundation. She joins us now to discuss the report. Elizabeth, welcome back to Lincoln Radio Journal. Elizabeth, when we talk about the state budget, we very frequently talk about taxes, we talk about spending. But another aspect to the picture here that is really huge and has a big impact financially is the impact of regulation or overregulation. You are author of a report, Cutting Red Tape in Pennsylvania. Give us a bit of an overview here. How onerous is the regulatory burden in Pennsylvania?
We wanted to look to see if we could put a number on the opportunity cost, if you will, of regulation. We know that it takes a lot of time from people, time that could be spent on other more productive things. We know there's a cost, you know, there's fees and fines and that sort of thing wrapped up in regulation. So we wanted to see, okay, let's see if we can put a number on what we're missing out. And what we came to find is that regulation is really best described as a hidden tax. It's a hidden tax on Pennsylvania's time. It's a hidden tax on Pennsylvanians' wallets. And when we tried to break it down into numbers, we found that if you cut the regulations in Pennsylvania by about 36%, you would see a 1% increase in GDP, which doesn't sound, 1% doesn't sound like a lot, but what that translates into is more than $9 billion every single year in additional economic activity. So what you're really doing with all this overregulation is restricting the number of jobs, restricting the creativity, and really the wealth that Pennsylvanians can generate.
In looking at another aspect of the regulatory burden here, Elizabeth, what about the time that it takes for businesses, large and small, to work their way through regulatory processes?
It does take a lot of time to comply. To give you a number, the actual number of regulatory restrictions, and I want to back up and explain that this isn't just the number of regulations on the books, but this is the number of thou shalt, thou must, things that businesses and nonprofits and other entities have to do. These are the specific things that they must do to stay in compliance with state law. If you count all those up, that's more than 166,000 different regulations. And so if you were to sit down and try to figure out and read through all those things, you would be spending quite a bit of time in order to read that entire code. And that's 20% more, mind you, than 20% more than the average state. So what we've done over time is made it more and more difficult for businesses and other entities to comply with our regulations by simply adding one on top of another. To give you a specific number, it would take you about 18 and a half weeks to read the entire Pennsylvania code. And no one business or person is regulated by all those regulations, right? But the problem we see manifesting itself is that it's layer upon layer upon layer. So it's not just one or two really bad, really costly regulations that take a long time to comply. It's 2 hours here, 5 hours there, $300 here, $100 there, and it all adds up, and sometimes it even conflicts. So that really puts Pennsylvanians in a difficult spot as they try to stay compliant with the regulations because we never remove any rules. We just keep adding more rules on top of the old rules.
Who in Pennsylvania gets regulated here, Elizabeth? There's a lot of different types of businesses, a lot of different types of industry. Can you give us an example of what types of industries or businesses are most highly regulated?
Well, your most highly regulated businesses are your waste disposal companies, your trash man, and the people who are generating energy or extracting energy to make electricity. So when you look at the breakdown by departments in state government, environmental regulations account for one in every five regulatory restriction. So that's over 33, almost 34,000 restrictions just for that sector alone. So coal, natural gas, all those nuclear, all those guys that are generating energy, they're the ones that have the most onerous regulatory regime. The other thing that is important to note is that we regulate a lot of professions in Pennsylvania. So there are a lot of different jobs in Pennsylvania where you are required to get a state license. And so Pennsylvania has about 29 separate professional boards and commissions that regulate over a million workers. Anything from a hairstylist to a teacher to a nurse. There are many professions that require permission and different regulatory hoops you have to jump through in order to work in Pennsylvania.
Are all these regulations and all these boards and commissions, Elizabeth, are they actually, and of course there is a need to protect the public in many ways, but are they really protecting the public or are they trying to restrict competition within their particular area?
Yeah, and that's a pushback that we always get at Commonwealth of Nation is, you know, you don't want any regulation. And I just want to, you know, respond to that for the listeners and help them think through, you know, no, that's not the position that we're taking. We're talking about meaningful regulation that actually does something good. So in many of the cases we pull out in the report, there's a case we made that this regulation doesn't really help people. It just prevents competition, as you said. It's a very effective way to capture government, if you will, if you make it so hard for any of your competitors ever to set up shop. So that is certainly at play in the licensing, and we even see that to some extent in other sectors of the economy. But I think it's important in this study, you know, we didn't say what would be the benefit if we reduced all regulatory restrictions. We said, let's just cut a little more than a third. And the reason we chose that number is because other states have done this, and they've seen economic positive economic impact. And so what we're saying is less regulation, regulation that actually does what it says it's supposed to do, whether that's protect the environment or give people high quality services. When you have just that regulation in place, we all thrive and we flourish. What we have right now is overregulation. It's just layer upon layer built up at this point over a century in Pennsylvania, where no one ever took a step back and said, okay, do these rules from 50 years ago still accomplish what we want them to accomplish? Or do we still need regulations on industries in the same way that they were regulated 50, 20 years ago? A classic example of this is nuclear energy. The technology is far superior than it was 50 years ago, but yet we've never gone back and reevaluated those regulations to see what actually makes sense.
We are talking with Elizabeth Snell of the Commonwealth Foundation about her report, Cutting Red Tape in Pennsylvania. And Elizabeth, some folks will say, well, you're just trying to make it easier for big business to succeed. But actually, regulation can be much more harmful to small businesses. There are actually some rather ridiculous requirements, and you chronicled some of these in your report. So tell us a bit about the impact on the small business person.
We recently told a story about a woman in the Bethlehem area who is an entrepreneur. She owns both a salon and a tattoo parlor. And even though she runs both businesses and they're located side by side, they have to have separate LLCs and they have to have separate entrances. And that is because of all the rules and regulations around salons and hairstyling and makeup, to the point that her makeup artists have to be either licensed as a cosmetologist or as an esthetician. Even though neither of those trainings actually require any significant curriculum on how to apply makeup, they don't even oftentimes cover how to sanitize makeup between clients. So again, this is a complete mismatch. The regulation sounds like it's protecting people, but all it really does is make it harder for people to set up salons and to provide services to Pennsylvanians. Another kind of classic Pennsylvania example is the Milk Marketing Board. This entity imposes a lot of regulations on farms and other family-owned businesses. They levy almost 500 different regulations on the production and selling of milk, which, again, was intended to protect the industry, but actually creates a big barrier to that industry innovating and finding new ways to provide better services.
Elizabeth Snell is Director of Policy Analysis at the Commonwealth Foundation. We've been talking about the report, Cutting Red Tape in Pennsylvania. And Elizabeth, let's end by having you tell us just a bit about the Commonwealth Foundation and where can folks go to read this report?
Folks can read the report by going to commonwealthfoundation.org, and they can find it there by searching regulation or cutting red tape. You can also find us on Twitter at Liberty4PA. We're also on Facebook. And basically what we do is we take ideas like limited government, what helps Pennsylvanians prosper, and we turn those into policies that lawmakers advocate for. And at the end of the day, we're all about a better Pennsylvania for all Pennsylvanians. And we think overregulation is a major opportunity to make life better for everyone that lives here in the Commonwealth.
Elizabeth Snell of the Commonwealth Foundation. Elizabeth, as always, thank you for being with us.
My pleasure.
It is a new year, but many of the policy issues local, county, and state officials grappled with in 2023 await resolution. Here to talk about the potential impact on taxpayers are Frank Gamrat and Eric Montardi with this Allegheny Institute report.
Hello and welcome to the Allegheny Institute Report on the Lincoln Institute Radio Journal. I'm your host, Frank Gamrat, and with me today is Allegheny Institute Research Director Eric Montardi. Eric, we had a pretty interesting 2023 here in Pennsylvania, specifically in Allegheny County. We had a few things come up that we had to deal with and we will continue to deal with, such as the election of a new Allegheny County Chief Executive and what that means going forward. We also had the Commission on Equitable Funding for Public Schools had their hearings and their meetings and what they have found and recommended. And that, of course, is going to make its way to the Commonwealth budget of Governor Shapiro in the next month or so. So what I'd like to do for our listeners today is just kind of talk about some of the topics that we covered in 2023 and some of the things we look forward to covering in 2024. And let's let's start with the biggie, and that is the Commission on Equitable Funding in Public Education, which I know you've been keeping up with the hearings of that committee.
The commission's wrapped up its work, and it's approved a report which will then go to the General Assembly and the governor. As you mentioned, you know, could be part of budget deliberations for this year coming up. Its price tag is around $5 billion. It involves keeping the existing basic education funding formula in place, which is a combination of hold harmless, which doesn't change even if a school district loses enrollment, and then the student-weighted formula, which is tied to enrollment and a bunch of other factors, and that's how new money is driven out. There is the concept of an adequacy gap, which is trying to come up with a per student spending amount. If a district is not spending there, the state is going to raise money somehow and then send that to those districts so that they catch up. A lot of this, of course, is driven by last February's Commonwealth Court ruling that said that the way that Pennsylvania is funding its public schools is unconstitutional. The court said it's not our task to figure out how to fund the schools. That's the job of the legislative and the executive branches, and negotiations through the rest of this fiscal year will be definitely focused on this education funding issue.
The funding commission has made that recommendation, and now we have to ask the question, how are you going to pay for it? And one of the things to keep in mind is the reason for the disparity is you've got local taxation where you have some districts that are able to pay for more things for their districts because they can raise that money locally. And then, of course, an interesting point from there is what's going to happen with the teachers' unions? Teachers' unions, they like working for some of these richer districts. So if you tell these richer districts that they can no longer raise that kind of money, what will the teachers' unions say about that? Because then their contracts would inevitably have to be reduced or frozen to make up for it. You know, you just can't have them making all kinds of money in these richer districts and not in the other districts. So that's going to be an interesting thing going forward. Another thing that we had here in Allegheny County was the election of a new Allegheny County Chief Executive, Sarah Innamorato. Ace Fitzgerald was term limited out, and so she takes over, and the first thing she did hitting the ground running was give a raise to all her non-union employees. And she did so under the guise that, well, it's in this budget, but she's never mentioned anything about the future budgets. You know, how are you going to raise that money going forward? And then she made the comment that, well, this will give the union members, when they come up for negotiations, a better platform to which to negotiate from. And the question you have to ask from there is, whose side is she on? Is she going to try to take care of her union buddies and not the taxpayers? And that's going to be interesting to see going forward. Another issue is the vacancy rates in downtown Pittsburgh. Now, why that's important is because the vacancy rates determine the market value of a building, which then, of course, determines the assessments and how much, you know, you can charge for taxes and get in tax property tax revenue. And with three buildings already winning massive reductions to their assessment values, and I think 55 more buildings also up for property assessment appeals, there's going to be a very large drop in county property tax revenues, at least in my estimation, that this new county executive is going to have to deal with. And in her first couple weeks of office, she's handing out money like it's, you know, popsicles in the summertime. And it's just going to be a matter of, well, where are you going to get this money if it starts to dry up? This notion of, you know, bringing people back into the office is starting to take hold. You're starting to see firms realize that there's a productivity issue with people not being in the office and asking them to come back in. What you then have is this move, what they call a flight to quality. If I'm going to be in the office, you better make it worth my while as an employee. And so they're moving to higher use value buildings, Class A trophy buildings, most likely, that have all the bells and whistles. They have amenities that employees would want to do. And even if the employees are not in 5 days a week, they're trying to make them be in at least 3 days a week. So will that reverse the vacancy rate? It probably will for the trophy buildings. But then we bring up the question of what about the lower class buildings, the Class Bs and Cs and whatnot? They've been vacant for a very long time. Other issues that we see coming up, the idea of reassessment in general. We've been working on this a lot. We think Allegheny County, which hasn't had a reassessment since 2012, is way overdue. and Allegheny County Executive Anna Morado on the campaign trail said she'd support it. Now she's waffling.
Right. And again, because of state law that allows counties to have base year or current market value, we have two counties this year statewide, one over here, Beaver County, which hadn't done one since 1982, and then Tioga County, which hadn't done one, I think, since 2001 or 2002. There's very few counties that just try to keep these values up to date. And what you have is like the situation in Allegheny County, where you have then sales that exceed the assessed values. The taxing bodies, typically the school districts, appeal. Now, in the last few years, we've had this issue of a lawsuit over the common level ratio and how that's used in appeals. And now you might see a switch that there's more owners that are going to appeal rather than the taxing bodies. And again, like how you said, how that all plays out when you have appeals that take things up, appeals that lower the values, construction, improvements, demolition, and then it all comes out with some number, what the value is for the county that they certified for all the taxing bodies to know this is the tax base that exists for this year, or at least at the beginning of the year, because you have these constant changes. But we have written long about this, that there should just be a reassessment cycle, that this just becomes more predictable for counties and then for taxpayers that know that their assessed values are just, as best as you can, keeping them up to market value with some certainty.
Right, and I think this is going to become a little more of an important topic as we grapple with these funding of schools. But now if you're going to talk about, you know, funding local school districts, and the property tax is one of the main ways to do it, these counties are going to have to make sure that the reassessments are up to date and fairly frequent so that that process can be done fairly and as equitably as possible. Eric, any other topics that you'd like to let our listeners know you're working on or thinking about?
We always encourage you to come and visit our website at AlleghenyInstitute.org, and that's where we keep everything up to date, and they can read the issues that we've worked on over the years that they'll come back to the forefront in 2024.
Absolutely. You know, we've been at this now since 1995. We've been doing terrific research in affecting and changing the arguments around the policy topics. And like Eric said, it's all of these topics are on our website, AlleghenyInstitute.org. You can download our briefs. You can sign up free to your email. Come about once a week. Thank you for listening.
Pennsylvania will once again be a presidential battleground state as Joe Biden continues to campaign in the Commonwealth. But are voters buying what he is selling? We learn more from Emily Green of Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania on this Lincoln Radio Journal commentary.
President Joe Biden has visited Pennsylvania four times since December 1st, 2023. Like clockwork, President Biden is back in the Commonwealth, angling ahead of November's elections for the 19 electoral votes that Pennsylvania can deliver. With the facade of Bidenomics wearing off, as the general public grows cognizant of the president's failed economic policy, President Biden's visits grow shorter and shorter. Most recently, the president visited Emmaus, Pennsylvania, right in the heart of Congresswoman Susan Wild's district. The visit is notable in the sense that this marks the first visit for the president outside of Philadelphia metropolitan area or outside of Pittsburgh and its surrounding counties. For once, the president recognizes that there are many other regions of the Commonwealth, and Pennsylvanians outside of the two largest cities deserve more accountability from their leadership in Washington. However, there's another driver behind President Biden's choice to visit the Lehigh Valley. He is attempting to garner support for his failed economic policy in the hopes that he can attempt to win over Congresswoman Wild's constituency despite her record on failed economic policy. The failures of so-called Bidenomics cannot solely be attributed to that of President Joe Biden. Congresswoman Wild's voting record has been in lockstep with Biden since he was sworn in January of 2021. In early 2023, Congresswoman Wild signed on as an original co-sponsor of Biden's Job-Killing PRO Act legislation, which would hurt flexible work at a time where Pennsylvanians are struggling to make ends meet. According to polling conducted last year by Lending Club, a whopping 62% of Americans are living paycheck to paycheck. Last October, the Labor Department reported that 8.4 million Americans held more than one job, presumably due to the rise in inflation. As such, many Pennsylvanians are turning to flexible work through Uber, Lyft, DoorDash, and more. But if Congresswoman Susan Wild and President Joe Biden have their way, flexible work will be unattainable for the hardworking Pennsylvanians looking to supplement their current incomes. When Air Force One touched down in Allentown earlier this month, the president began to force the narrative that his, quote, investing in America agenda has helped small business owners in the Lehigh Valley realize economic prosperity. Rather, his central planning, disguised as economic development, ultimately awarded taxpayer funds to certain industries, allowing for the federal government to determine winners and losers within the market. Amongst the deemed, quote, winners were the Lehigh Valley International Airport, who were granted $5 million from the Department of Transportation for renovations, and the Lehigh Valley Planning Commission, who were granted $1 million to, quote, help create a climate action plan. Congresswoman Susan Wild was on site to enthusiastically welcome the 46th president to the region, sharing, quote, this is exactly the kind of area that the president should be visiting. Without a doubt, this endorsement of President Biden's top-down policies, masked under the name of, quote, Bidenomics, signals her support of massive government spending bills that further drive our debt to record trillions of dollars and leave the general electorate to face unfathomable economic hardship. We need to demand more of our representation in Washington. For the sake of economic freedom for all constituents of Pennsylvania's 7th Congressional District and beyond, we must do better. We must reject the president's failed economic policies through bottom-up solutions that allow us to keep more of our hard-earned resources in our pockets, right where they belong, so that we can make the best economic decisions for ourselves and our families. Help us by scaling your voice for a more prosperous Pennsylvania, one that rejects President Biden and Congresswoman Wild's economic plan. Head to BrokenBidenomics.com to make your voice heard. Again, that is BrokenBidenomics.com. This is Emily Green, Deputy State Director with Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania.
If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. It is time to talk about the Pennsylvania Leadership Conference coming up April 4 through 6 at the Penn Harris Hotel and Convention Center near Harrisburg. This year's featured dinner speaker will be Judge Jeanine Pirro of Fox News The Five. She will be joined by a wide range of state and national speakers and panelists. The three-day event will also include an expanded schedule of workshops. The Pennsylvania Leadership Conference is the nation's largest and longest-running, this is the 35th year, of state-based conservative activist conferences in the nation. Get complete details and register for this year's Pennsylvania Leadership Conference at paleadershipconference.org. That's paleadershipconference.org. Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, and the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal, plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.
We'll be right back.